Blog Talk Radio.
It is Sunday, October 11, 2015, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in America. My name is Grantham Taylor Hughes for my show, The Grantham Taylor Hughes Show, with my guest host each week, Gabriella Foster. How are you, Gabriella? How are you?
I'm fine. Did you forget my name?
Well, I stuttered over it a bit.
I see. I was wondering, where was my musical introduction? You know, where you go, do 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 do, and here's Gabriella Foster. I was like, I would like to institute that.
You mean a theme song, right?
Yeah.
And like,
yes,
Johnny Carson's theme song. Right. You should have a theme song. Everybody
mm-hmm.
should have a theme song. Well, we'll work on that. I'll make
okay.
a note. Theme song okay. for my guest host each week.
Mm-hmm.
theme song before you come on. But
or you can do
the
drum thing, mm-hmm. you know, the quick, the bit, like that. Did it?
You mean the drum roll?
Yeah, but just like the partial drum roll.
Oh, partial drum roll. I see.
Anyway,
I
go on.
I'm
keeping you from speaking about whatever it is you're going to be speaking about.
Well, I was going to say I'm really partial to that drum roll.
Thank you.
You know, to the partial drum roll. I'm partial to it.
Yes, you're partial to the partial drum roll. I get it.
And that's the nature of politics. You want to be impartial. See?
Right.
And bipartisan, as they use the term.
Right.
Not unipartisan or omnipartisan.
Mm-hmm.
That would be everybody who's involved, right? If you use omnipartisan. Well, supposedly, and I'm not condemning Blog Talk Radio because I really appreciate what they do here, is they keep putting me into the legal category, which I'd like to be in the politics category, because I believe what we do each week is about politics more so than it is about law, I do talk about law, but I talk about specifically, like in our description, show description, I talk about the Uniform Commercial Code law, but I don't really talk much about other law because it's suspended. And so maybe I'd like to elaborate on some of that in reference to. There's a lot of discussion and there's a lot of, there's a lot of shows and television shows that talk about Constitution law, and the Constitution is a general household name or word, but a lot of people don't realize it's been suspended since 1930. Now, you're aware of that, correct, Gabrielle?
Yes, I am, because I am on the show. And I've heard you say it before, but actually I did know it before the show.
Well, it's an important issue because people shouldn't be duped into believing that the Constitution is in effect. But again, all these television shows, for instance, a few years back, well, I guess it's been about a decade, they had the West Wing talking about constitutional law, and most of these government shows talk about constitutional law. But that doesn't exist because, as for said, it's been suspended since 1930. And that means, well, what law is in effect then in the courtroom? I ask people that a lot. I say, what law is used in the courtroom? And then sometimes the judge will tell you there's statutory law, but what he means by that is Section 1 of the Uniform Commercial Code, the statutes of that particular law. And they're using the bankruptcy codes of that particular law called the Uniform Commercial Code that we kindly use the letters UCC. So UCC is very important to understand that it's not just for use for commercial reasons. And that would be the argument if you were asked congressmen or some authority about the UCC. They would tell you it relates to commerce and money. It does, but it also relates to the international bankruptcy that I describe in my show description and not to use the nouns and verbs of the same word in all the sentences, correct? Like description and describe. Anyway, that was a pretty good joke, don't you think?
Yes. I'm laughing. You just can't hear me.
Well, see, I'm supposed to tell a joke in the first 20 seconds, but I'm not supposed to editorialize and talk about that, correct?
No, that's true.
That's
Would you like me to tell
to
a joke?
Sure, go ahead.
Well, you know my jokes, they always go very long
because
I elaborate on them.
It's really long, isn't it? Is it possible to shorten it up?
No, because it's not so much fun, so I'll tell it another time.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, you know I don't know only one joke. You know what joke it is. But don't say
the
word
joke.
Because that'll give the punchline. What?
But now you're making everybody intrigued by not telling the joke.
Okay. Well, you know, there's been an awful lot of construction in the city recently, and so one of the buildings is extremely high. I forget how many stories, but it's very, very high. And it's not an office building. It's actually a building of condos. And the interesting thing about it is they built all these balconies, but they didn't put any railings on the balconies, which is kind of a weird deal. But anyway, there was they celebrated the opening of the building, and there were several gentlemen there, I think, might have been associated with it, and they were at the bar drinking and talking about the building, and one of the men in the group said, you know what's really weird about these balconies is they don't have any rails. What's to prevent anybody from falling off this building? It's ridiculous. We're 100 stories up. And so the other man had a drink in his hand. He was a very tall, good-looking man, dark-haired man. He had spectacles on it. And he said, well, it's actually not a problem. He said, I'm the architect who built the building. And we put into place a force field so that you cannot fall off this building. You cannot fall off the balcony. There's no way possible. The other guy says, look, I know we've had a couple of drinks, but I'm not that drunk that I'm going to believe that story. So the architect looked at him. He said, make a path. I'm gonna run out there and jump off the balcony and show you. The other guy said, sure, go ahead. It's your life. So the architect started running as fast as he could, and he actually leapt off the balcony, and everybody's waiting because they think he's going to fall and splatter on the ground 100 stories below, and suddenly he pops back up on the balcony. And they go, wow, that's amazing. That really is true. He says, yeah. He says, I told you. He says, why don't you go ahead and charge for yourself? You'll see. So the other guy's pretty excited, and he puts down his drink, and he gets the same thing. He's running for it, jumps off the balcony, only he lands 100 stories below on the sidewalk and splats at the end of him. And there were a couple other guys in the group that were watching all this, and one of them, who knew the architect really well, said, you know, you're really a jerk when you're drunk, Superman.
Gosh, but you've used that before in terms of
what?
The bartender. The bartender
what?
Tells him. The
oh,
bartender
okay, I couldn't remember. Okay, well, it's so funny, didn't matter, did it?
It is funny. At the same time,
okay.
You know, I have to go,
okay, fine, you've heard the joke before.
But the intro was so long.
I haven't told the joke in a long time, so I forgot that it was a bartender. But it still was a good punchline.
Yeah, like a 30-second lead-up to the getting to their dialogue. Gosh, I know.
But I like to draw my joke out. I know there's a good way to blow off four minutes.
It's a good way to blow off 4 minutes.
Yeah, and
then
I got you off the hook, so you didn't have to talk for 4 minutes. So aren't you pleased
with
that?
I see. So wasting everybody's time, right, with telling
I'm
jokes.
I'm sorry, everybody who has either heard that joke before or didn't think the joke was funny or was totally bored with the way I told the joke, I do deeply apologize to all of you, and you can send your letters in.
Yeah, right. So, again, they talk about me being topic-driven, right? gosh. In terms of the subject. Yes, well, we'll get to the subject 10 minutes into the show. Since we only have 30 minutes, or actually 21 minutes into the show, we only have 20 minutes, less than 20 minutes to do the topic, whatever that may be. Well, thank goodness everybody reads the description on the show, correct? In terms of talking about a very exciting subject, the bankruptcy, international bankruptcy, and everybody falls asleep immediately. Right?
Yeah.
And now they're snoring. Yeah. Well, but to me, it's very stimulating because of the fact that, like we had said before, when we realize the Constitution has been suspended, then we have to go and find out what the law really is about. Then we really need to know the truth and what goes on in society. So is there truth that's happening in society? Well, I always talk about three factors in the platform that I present politically is that theory, law, and practice. That theoretically, there's a lot of good ideas, but in practice, very rarely is anything put into practice. And then you can see that the law and practice are different. So that does that mean that the practice is the law? Well, probably 90% of the time it isn't. So it's probably an audacious statement to say that most of our practices aren't lawful. Kind of interesting, right?
Right.
Jeez. Yeah, I'm going to pick on you again. In your journalistic world,
I'll give you more than the one word or an answer. I thought my 4-minute joke got me off the hook, but you're expecting more from me,
well,
I can see.
Well, tonight I'm concerned if you do more than one word answer, you might tell a 4-minute joke.
Okay. Well, I will. Okay. Ask me a question.
So thank goodness that's the only joke that you
know,
right?
What?
I said thank goodness that you say that's the only joke that you know, right?
Well, I'm sure that if I look backward, I could probably find another joke.
Please.
Not so funny. Sorry.
And not this time, right? Yeah.
And not
exactly because everybody will just hang up.
I will refrain.
It's quite all right. You know, I think one joke is enough, right, for the show.
Right, and that's what the guy said when he was having breakfast and he was worried about his cholesterol. He said, one yolk's enough. Oh, you said joke. I'm sorry.
Boy, now we know who's in charge of the show. We have a comedians out of work here, right? Comedians out of work show. No, it's quite all right. No, I'm all for levity. I think that I was planning on making a comedy show anyway at one time, or a comedic variety show, right? I guess that's what it's turned into, especially today.
I didn't know that. You were planning on doing a comedic variety show? Ed Sullivan? Were you going to be the new Ed Sullivan?
Yeah, exactly.
Or were you going to do like the Tonight Show or something?
See, the whole thing about that, and I'll be quite honest, since we're doing editorializing and candor tonight, I never really wanted to be a comedian because in private, comedians are always supposed to be making people laugh all the time. No, so it's expected of them, and they're never really taken seriously. I mean, as is, I have friends that don't take me seriously because I am pretty much a kidder. So, and therefore, having said all that, I've been much more a comedian than I have a serious type my whole life. But again, there are serious issues, just like the planks of the platform that I present on the show, which I have not said anything about yet. And even though we can check the archive, because I've done this show for, what, about 9 years now? Something like that. Has that been that long? Yeah,
possibly,
since 2007, so about 8 years.
Yeah. Well,
that we've done the show.
Mm-hmm.
So if you miss anything from tonight's variety show, you can check out the archives of this topic that we're discussing in terms of the international bankruptcy. It's been going on since 1930. So you're looking at 85 years of bankruptcy. And then people say, well, can't we get out of the bankruptcy? Well, we really can't, albeit I have a fix for it, a theoretical fix, that hasn't been implemented. And since I haven't said that in a long time, perhaps I'll mention that this evening. In terms of the fix would be a paper instrument backing the Federal Reserve note, which would be called the Federal Reserve Certificate. And then we say, well, is it the difference between one word, a note and a certificate? Yes, it is. It's very critical. As you know, that the derivation of the word certificate is what?
Certain.
Yes, very good, that you discovered several months ago, where I used to say the derivation was certify, but it appears that that's really an intermediary derivative statement of the term derivation certain. And that's very important. So when we see the word C-E-R-T-A-N, certainty or certain, it is very important, I would say. And that's a lot of confidence, because now we're certain of the instrumentation that would be the document in terms of a contract sequence. Not necessarily backing the contracts or backing the note, but it would be the fact that a note could be redeemed for a certificate. So it doesn't necessarily mean it's backing. So I don't want to use that language, because backing has a problem. I was talking to my UK group this morning in terms of that whole backing thing. That instruments should have their independence, standalone independence, just like the Federal Reserve note would be a debt instrument. But it's not necessarily backed by the certificate, but it could be redeemed for a certificate, but they don't exist. You see what I mean? If you take a Federal Reserve note into the bank and ask for a certificate, redeemable certificate for that note, they don't have them. And therefore, the banks are in what is known as breach of contract. It would be contract fraud or breach of contract. That means that they don't have a contract that is redeemable for the note. And that's an issue. That's an issue in terms of breach of contract. Because the note is standalone in terms of debt, but a debt instrument will have to have a certificate to turn it into credit. It has to be monetized as credit and not backed by it, see? Because the whole point is, if you talk about backing or instrument that's behind another instrument, it doesn't really make any sense. But the way they make sense out of that in the past is we talk about substance, like gold and silver backing the money at one time in terms of what is known as specie currency. Like you have a specie, a substance of some kind that's backing the paper. In other words, the paper would just be a receipt, and the original, really the medium of exchange would be the gold or whatever substance is declared by a vote of the people congressionally or something of that nature, a surrogate representation that would vote on what would be the monetary. Are you there? Because I hit the button.
Yes.
I hit a button. Okay.
What's wrong?
No, I hit my phone button and made a tonal noise on the numbers. And I was wondering if I disconnected. But anyway, back to the discussion of the whole process in reference to the bankruptcy, that we're in a bankruptcy because in the 1930 Geneva Convention, they bankrupted the international community because they wanted to avoid the issues of world war in terms of countries that would plunder for specie. And they discovered that after World War One, that would be a very good thing to take away the specie so that there wouldn't be plunder. But then World War Two happened because it was a communications issue. In other words, it was too late to not have that take place, and therefore they were all ramping up to the other countries to try to take over the reserves, the specie reserves, to try to control the money. So it was a power issue in terms of a tangible power issue of attacking warehousing or storage facilities of gold and silver. And that would be controlling the monetary system. That's a very powerful statement, because we know that money is a big issue in our lives, and therefore to control it, all of it, lock, stock, and barrel, would obviously cause major conflagrations, major warfares, which it did. Another word, good word for it is Gogomachy, a war, just a huge conflict over the control of the monetary system. And that is the major issue that we're talking about in reference to this bankruptcy. So my relatives and what have you get blind in think tanks to take away the specie, and therefore we haven't had a war, a world war, since 1945. So it's been quite a while. It's been over 70 years since there's been a world war. And so that is very important, because it did stop the world wars. Surely it doesn't stop the military economic demolition. And I realize that. The military economic demolition takes place because we have issues in countries where you'll have parts of the country or parts of the economy are not turning profit. So when we're not turning profit, then that means it needs to go. The assets need to go away so they can replace them to turn a profit. So it gets into the dry, boring, I will say, to most people, not to me, of course, but the economic issues. I think economics is very stimulating, but to most people, it seemingly, supposedly goes over their head, but I don't really want it to do that. That's why I make it connected to issues, so to speak, in terms of understanding it very well regarding the balance of trade and equilibrium of payments, albeit we can't do that because we have a mathematics problem. And I was just discussing that this morning, because math is not an exacting science collectively. You understand my view on that? Do you remember what I talked about with that? Just to ask you for some feedback in reference to that question.
Yeah, but I couldn't understand the last sentence. You said math is not, and I couldn't understand the rest of it.
No, the math is not a collective science.
I didn't hear it. Yeah. Math is not
math
a collective
is not,
science.
Correct. It's an individual science. I know mathematicians would argue that, because they teach it to groups of people, teaching the fact that when you do the relativity and that, if you insert relativity into mathematics, and they're always doing that because that's what Einstein did. He tried to measure relativity with math. See, that was the whole idea of the equation E equals MC squared, which really is a very large mathematical equation that would cover an entire chalkboard. But the short form is E equals...
You're talking about math at a higher level, not basic math. You're talking about math at a higher level not being collective science, right?
No, I'm talking about math even at a low level, like 1 plus 1 is 2. But what are you measuring in terms of those premises? What 1 are you talking about? 1 and 1 equals 2. One ship, one house, or there are many... You're talking about a categorization of the premise.
Okay, so you think those things are refutable? 1 and 1 equals 2. Basic math is not necessarily true, is what you're saying?
I'm saying it's not a collective science. We can't do it in a collection. In other words, we can't take 10 people and expect them to get the same numbers even on a piece of paper. The way I explained that, I have always said, when I took my first physics class in college, there were 50 students in the room. The professor passed out 50 pieces of paper, blank sheets of paper, 50 rulers and 50 pencils. And the instructions were to measure the top edge of the page, put the answer in the left-hand corner, and pass the paper back up to the teacher. Teacher got the 50 pages back. How many different answers were there in the class?
Well, yeah, of course we know that there were 50 because I've heard the story so many times before. But
well, yes,
I understand that.
Yes.
But that's different. But that's different. That's a measurement factor which can vary. I'm talking about if you put, you know, two apples, you know, one apple plus another apple, you're going to have two apples. How is that going to be different?
Yeah, but the apples themselves would be different. You know, they're not going to be the same apple. But
well,
let me go back
true,
to that
but how
similar
do you like
analogy.
An apple? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Very fine. What do you think you are, Matt Damon, and that movie, It's Not As Good As It Gets? What was it? I forgot. The one where he was. Matt Damon and How You Like Them Apples, when Robin Williams was a psychiatrist. Good
oh,
Will
you're talking
Hunting.
About Good Will Hunting, yeah.
Right, Good Will Hunting. And he used that, How You Like Them Apples. But that's an old mm-hmm. saying, too.
Right.
But what I'm trying to get back, not Leslie's new comedic half hour. I'm sorry, who's that? Gabriella's half hour.
Yes.
I called you my wife's name again. I've done that periodically. But that's
well,
because you're
a
woman.
Well, I'm very flattered because she's a very lovely individual, so thank you.
Yeah, I think so, too, and I'd be in trouble if I didn't say that. So where are we? I totally forgot what I was talking about. That's okay.
We're talking about math not being a collective science, and I was just trying to understand...
Well,
is that I understand that the apples wouldn't necessarily be identical, but just taking that away, just throw that concept out. Just let's say, for example,
well,
they're both so
well,
apples.
Just forget that analogy, if you will, for a minute, and go to basic numbers. If I even just put the number one down and a number two number ones, and I ask, pass out 50 pages to 50 students and ask to write down 1 plus 1 equals 2 and then turn that back in, you're going to get different numbers. You're going to get different equations. It's going to be different, see? And
some of them can count?
No, because, pardon me, because they what? Yeah,
because
some of them can't count. Could be. That's the problem. You see what I
mean? The thing is how we have to have some kind of basic principles or premises or math or whatever for things to work in the physical plane, in the world where we have to go about and do things and build things and count things. And there's got to be some kind of premise or foundation there that we work with. And that's where math comes into play. So it has to be. It can't be relative on that level, otherwise nothing would ever get accomplished.
Well, does anything really get accomplished in terms of societies are pretty much destroyed, layered upon layered upon layer? Anthropology thinks they find every single day it seems like they're finding more ancient skeletons and dating and going back. And I'm saying, well, you better get a pole that's about a million miles long so you can dig down underneath all the layers of societies that have been covered by sandstorms and dirt and everything else, because it's pretty much never ending. You see what I mean? So people think they find things, but then they're not finding anything because everything is destroyed. So what you're saying is it really doesn't work, and I'm trying to say the relativity of it is proved, especially the more complex math that takes place, the more numbers that you have, the more things you have to measure. If you have even two people to try to measure somebody's accounting and bookkeeping of IBM or some big company, right, they're going to make a cock-up of it every single time, and it's not going to be the same. So I'm just saying, take out the equation 1 plus 1 equals 2, even though I could prove that up if I had 50 students in a classroom to do it. You're talking about when you're trying to do somebody's books, and two people try to do it and try to come up with the same numbers and never going to do it. I would put big money on that. Anyway, so we're getting down to the last few seconds. I got to go. Gabriella, thanks for being here. I appreciate it.
Yes, you're welcome. Sorry about the bad joke. And
no, it's okay. I
got
to go. This is Grant and Taylor Hughes for my show, the Grant and Taylor Hughes Show. See you next week and have a great week. Goodbye for now.